morning. My name's Ed Mutum, and I'm an alcoholic. By the grace of God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and sponsorship, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or a mood-altering chemical since January 5th of 1971. And for that, I'm extremely grateful. I know I'm too young and too pretty to be sober that long. It's just the way it is. My home group is the Big Book Study Group in Davenport, Iowa. We just celebrated our third anniversary, and we're all the way up to page 101 because we take our time about going through the book. Because the book is, to me, is a study. It really is a study, and I don't want to miss any of it. I am just absolutely delighted. I want to thank Fred for asking me to come here today, and Martha, and always good to see Lee. And I want to thank Vicki for that nice introduction and picking me up at the airport. I'm always touched to be able to share about the steps. Now, I don't think I'm an expert on the steps. I've run into a few experts in my time, and they're not folks I'd particularly like to hang around. But I believe this. I believe that as the result of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have been reborn and renewed. That I've been given something I never knew I had a chance at. And that's a full and complete life. One of the reasons I like to do reviews on steps is because something that's quite apparent to me, and maybe to you or not, is I don't know about you, but for a long time I thought it had to do with my drinking. You know, but an amazing thing happens. Once the drinking's out of the way, the thinking's the problem. And I heard a little story. I hate drunk stories, so I'll tell you one. But it's the best example I know of people in 12-step programs that I've ever seen. There was a guy stumbling along the beach, in fact, Daytona it was. And he was stumbling along, and he'd been on a two-week bender. Boy, needed to drink bad. He kicked this bottle and looked down, and he picked it up and brushed it off, and the genie popped out. Genie said, any two wishes. Anything you want. He said, you're kidding. He said, no, no, any two wishes. He said, I want a never-ending bottle of booze right here, right now. Genie said, so be it. Never-ending bottle of booze. Bottle became pristine, filled with the finest scotch in the world, and he drank about half of it down, looked at it, and filled right back up, and he was just amazed. And he said, okay, what's your other wish? He said, another one of these. And isn't that what we do with the steps? Another one, more of those, please. Because we don't get that the steps are the answer. It's already been done, and we don't get it. At least I didn't get it for an awfully long time. Because I used to drink a lot, and I couldn't stop drinking. And I don't know why you're here, but that's why I'm here. I would get a craving that my gut would lock in, and I would have to go regardless of the consequences, regardless of the looks in the faces. I had to go. And I hated myself for it, but I also knew I didn't have a choice. Now, that has been removed from me. A lot of times I hear people say, you know, I'm looking for a burning bush. I need the burning bush. Well, that's my burning bush, I'll tell you. And if you need more than that burning bush, maybe you're in the wrong program. Because that obsession was lifted from me. And I've got to thank God every single day. When I woke up this morning and opened my eyes, I thank God I didn't have the compulsion to drink or do whatever else I did. I was one of those that did a little bit of everything. So I don't care what you are, I'd probably qualify too. And that's the other thing I've learned about these steps and why I like talking about these steps is because I promise you this, whatever area of your life you're not applying these steps, that's the one that's going to get you. Now, how many are new in sobriety here? Good, good. Couple, three, four, that's excellent. And I'm glad you're here, and we're going to talk about drinking, we're going to talk about recovery, but we're going to talk about the other part of recovery, too. The one after the novelty of the obsession being gone wears off. Then what do? You know? We're going to talk about living a life of power. Of power. That God gives us through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, where do I get that silly information? Well, I get it out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So on page 45, I believe, I try not to memorize stuff, so I have to look it up and actually read it again. It's amazing. Lack of power was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself that will solve your problem. I always read that to the people that said, I don't get the spiritual part of this program. There is no other part. It's all about building relationship with God as I've come to understand Him, or you come to understand Him, that will change my life. And to surrender to that. We talk about step one. By the way, we're going to go and we're going to have a break at the end of each hour, a good 15-minute break. We're going to try to do that. And at the end of each session, I'll open it up for questions and answers. Our questions, hopefully I'll have some answers. Maybe somebody else does, and we'll be glad to do that. And I will be starting promptly on the hour, not because I'm a dictator, but somebody's got to be on time, and it might as well be me. And so on the hour, I'm gonna start. We're going to break an hour for lunch, okay? We got all that out of the way. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and our lives have become unmanageable. Well, for those of us who've been around for a while, I want you to say we are powerless over our life situations or our dependencies, and our life has become unmanageable. Because if you're new, you need to focus on that alcohol, and if you're used, you need to focus on that alcohol. But in my opinion, we got to encompass our whole life. It's not just about our addictions. It's about everything in life. And I said a moment ago that whatever area of your life you're not working it in, it's going to cost you. Those of you who've been around this program for a while know that we're losing people right and left to pornography, to gambling, to overeating, to you name it. And the simple fact is they don't understand this is about every area of our life. This is a program to change our way of life. Not the way we think about booze, but the way we live. And it's powerful. And it's more than you can ever imagine, but you have to do it first. If we don't apply these steps in our life, if we don't really do them, how do we know whether they work or not? When people come to me and ask me for, want to talk to me about their sobriety and what's going on, I have one question I always ask them right off. So what step are you actively working? Inevitably, they go, well, a little three, maybe a little six and seven, and a can from time to time. And you wonder why you're goofy. I don't know about you, but I have to be working a program. I can't be thinking about parts of the steps. I've got to be working a program. I've got to be living this way of life, or I'm just talking a good game. And man, there's a lot of talking going on. Now, how do I know that? Talked it for a long time. Guilty as charged, thank God. And step one, the first word in there, through me, we, what's we? Isn't it all about me? Isn't everything about me? The answer is no and remains no through the steps. Isn't that funny? They say this is a selfish program. I defy anybody to show me that in any of our literature. It says selfless, but it never says selfish anywhere. You hear that in meetings all over. Well, this is all about me. No, it's about your alcoholism. And it's about a program that will relieve you from the bondage of self. But it ain't about you. It's about we, and it's about our disease, first and foremost. Admitted. I never admitted nothing. I'd lie when the truth had served me better. I don't know about you. Richard Pryor was a terrible joke, but he used it, and I thought, man, if that's not alcoholic, and come to find out when he got sober, it truly was. He said, my wife walked in on me with another woman. And she got all upset, and I said, I wasn't doing anything. She said, yes, you were. He said, are you going to believe me or your lying eyes? Now, see, I would have believed that. Because just to admit was terrifying to me. Just to admit was terrifying to me. To admit anything Because deep down inside, I knew how I was. When I came into AA, I looked both ways before I came in the door, not because I was embarrassed for me, I was embarrassed for you. I thought, God, I don't want people to think ill of you because I'm hanging out with you. And you might think that's far-fetched, but it wasn't at all. I was not a nice person. I had to admit I was powerless over alcohol. Now, what does that mean? It's real simple. That once I took a drink or anything else, in my opinion, mood-altering, I cannot predict my reaction or location. I just can't. I tried and I tried and I tried. I'm powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. Who are we kidding? My life has been unmanageable forever. And usually most people see that. Now, there's a lot of people who come into the program who their life looks in certain areas that it's manageable. But upon inventory and upon discussing at a deeper level, our life is unmanageable. Mine was from every aspect. Mine was from my very earliest memories, and I didn't know how to do that. I thought my life had to be manageable. And if for some reason it wasn't manageable, it was a reflection of my inability or lack of character or lack of dignity or lack of purpose or lack of being. It had to be my fault, didn't it? Because after all, isn't it all about me? I had a terrible time with powerlessness. Part of the disease in me, I don't know about you, but kept telling me, it'll be better next time. I developed something at a very early age that I talk about a lot in when I talk, and it's my 299-to-1 theory. I could walk into a room of 300 people, 299 could turn around and say, Ed, you're the best. We love you. And one could go, jerk. What a jerk. Guess who got my full attention? From my very early stage. Now, the only time that was the opposite was with my drinking. I would forget the 299 bad experiences and I'd focus on the few good ones and think, yeah, I can do that again. Yeah, I'll do that again. Yeah, I remember when I had fun. And the evidence was the fun was gone. Everything was gone. My life was going out my sleeve. And I didn't know that I was powerless. Powerless. Weakness. Power. Power. But I always thought it was weakness. If I surrender, and that's what all these steps are about, in my opinion, is surrendering my will to whatever I conceive God to be, and we'll talk about that later because that took several different steps along the way in several different directions. But if I meant I was powerless, that meant I was defeated. And guess what? That's the truth. I was absolutely defeated where alcohol was concerned. And as I've come to believe, in about every area of my life is concerned, if I don't surrender it. Step one is, I'm not one of these that thinks one step is more important than the other. I'm one of those that believe it's part of a recipe for an incredible cake. And we give you the recipe in the books and in the 12 and 12, and I don't get into the big debate about, oh, the 12 and 12 versus the big book, and I, you know. Other people got time for that. I don't. But and that's fine. I'm not putting it down. I don't understand it, I guess. Because I think both of them have God's hand all over it. And I forgot where I was going with that, so I got to start all over. Good morning. My name's Ed, and I'm an alcoholic. Darn my notes. But powerless, surrender, ego. All of these steps, especially these first 7, 8, are ego deflating. I had an ego that was killing me. I had an ego that said I was worse than anybody. Believe it or not, that's ego. There's a lot of terms that flow around. Self-esteem, I'm not a big self-esteem guy. I'm just not. I'm a big God esteem guy. You know, if I build up my God esteem, then I'm not only lifting me up, I'm lifting you up, because I believe, just like I just read, it's in deep down inside of each and every one of us. Is that fundamental idea of God, and that's good. But I have to admit I'm powerless, and I have to surrender at a depth I've never known before. Now, thank God I didn't have to do that completely and 100% before I could go on. We're the only fellowship, the 12-step fellowships, especially AA and Al-Anon, are the only fellowships that pride themselves on being perfectionist. Actually, it's a character defect. We just don't understand it. I say to people, if you're a perfectionist, you might as well walk around with a big L on your head. Loser! Why is that? Because nothing's ever perfect and you're always going to fail. Duh! Demanding perfection is failure in the pursuit. Demanding that we do the best we can and accepting that fact is humility and maturity. Ego edging God out. That I was the worst that ever was. That nobody was ever worse than me. Think of that. You know, I don't know, but Charlie Manson's probably got the edge on me. You know, I just kind of feel that way. Now, but back then, oh no, not Charlie. He's probably a pretty good guy compared to me. You know? And I believed it. I believed it. Why was my life unmanageable? Because I didn't know how to run anything. The biggest mistake I've ever made in my life, and it took me years to correct, was starting to think that my feelings were facts. My feelings are not facts. If I give them that much power, guess what's going to run my life? God, I didn't know that. My life's unmanageable. Because I think everything I think and feel is the truth. I think I'm the worst thing ever going on. And I can't stop drinking in spite of the vows I took. I know there's other people in here who looked at those loved ones and said, honest to God, I won't do it ever again. And you know and I know that we were telling the truth. They could have hooked a lie detector to true. I was amazed as anybody else when I drank again. I can remember pounding on that bar thinking, how did I get here? What the hell's going on? What's wrong with me? It's very simple. I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable. Now, I'm glad that I could graduate into that. My first step was simply this. I knew I couldn't drink or use no matter what. That's what I knew. I knew that I had to do whatever it took to get away from there. I also knew that I could not afford to think. Because if I took time to think, one of us it was in trouble, and it was usually you at the beginning and me at the end. But I couldn't think. And I had to have somebody who could talk to me and give me some direction on where to go in life. I didn't know that then because I didn't feel worthy of that either. That whole sponsorship thing. I can remember the night I thought, suicide or call the sponsor. Suicide or call the sponsor. Suicide or call. Okay, I'll call the sponsor. Tough decision for me. Who am I to bother somebody in the middle of the night? Who am I to think I'm worthy of your help? One of God's kids. And that's what it talks about in the 12 steps. That's what it talks about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. We are all God's kids. And this step is ongoing. I am certainly glad I didn't have to do it 100%. I just knew that I could. I was like 7 or 8 months sober before I bought that alcoholic deal. I really did. I went to meetings and went, yeah, yeah, sure, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was a shaker. Any good shakers here? Oh, God, yeah. How you doing? Oh, good, Ed. Yeah, fine, fine. Want to cut the cake? Oh, no thanks. Oh, you know, no sharp objects. And, you know, it was just crazy. I mean, I was wired for sound, and I was just doing good to sit there, you know, and everything would vibrate around me. I don't know about you, but every once in a while something would fly off like this, you know. And I really feel bad that we don't get many good shakers anymore. They medicate them up pretty good, but I love shakers, man. I love shakers. Not too hard saying you're powerless then, I'll tell you. Getting a half cup of coffee, and I can remember the day I got it down to a half cup in those big old porcelain cups, and it like chipped my teeth, but I could. What a victory. The day I wrote my name so I could read it. Forget about you. I could read it. Victory. I was powerless. My life has become unmanageable. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Am I sure glad they don't mention God here? And they don't. They mention a power greater than myself. I needed that. Because in my 299 to ones, the 299 being the good, the ones being the bad, I had a bag of ones about this God who was a punk, who took people I loved, ripped people out of my life, and had babies starving all over the world, and let the rich keep getting richer and the poor keep getting poorer. Boy, did I have some deals about that. Thank God I came to AA and they said, make up your own God. Whatever. Whatever you want your God to be. A doorknob. You want your God to be a doorknob, let it be. You know, my prayer is one day to build a retreat house in Iowa. And I'm going to have a prayer garden for every faith that there is. And one of them is going to be rings of flowers just going out in a big circle. And in the middle is going to be just a doorknob. Some people will get it, some people won't. But you know what's amazing about our fellowship? Ships. I spoke in Virginia Beach a few months ago. What, did I goof that up? You okay? I spoke in Virginia Beach. Just making sure you're awake, Lee. Virginia Beach a few months ago. And there was a gal there whose higher power was up and to the right. I'm not making fun of her. Her higher power was up and to the right. And you see, what I love about that is that's fine with us. We just have a problem if your higher power is Christ. It can be a doorknob. It can be a human. It can be a dog. It can be a tree. But how dare you say Christ? Something sick about that. Something very basically wrong about that. Because one of the things I love about AA is we welcome everybody with their faith, regardless of whether you're Muslim, whether you're Jewish, Baha'i, you name it. We love you and we're glad you're here, even if you're Christian. But see, I had a problem with that whole Christian thing. That was my deal. When I was raised, I can remember going to church and there was a guy sitting there with thin blue lips. All Christians have thin blue lips. And he was acting holier than thou. And I saw him in the bar last night. He seemed a lot happier then, I don't mind telling. And I don't know who that grump was he was with, but the woman he was with seemed to be having a lot more. I'm getting a lot of feedback late. Seemed to be a lot more happier too, you know. And I judged the entire church by that guy. You see, I had my one. Not once did I think the 299 that sat behind him might be wonderful people, and indeed I found out they are. Just like for every jerk you find in our programs, there's 299 behind them that are wonderful. We just got to start looking for the wonderful instead of the jerks. But I was full of jerks when it came to this God thing. And I was so grateful for a power greater than myself and them saying that I could make up my own. Because I was so full of nonsense about God. And I believed it. It wasn't that I was atheist, man. I believed everything I thought and I hated it. And so I'm really glad they didn't bring up that I had to be a sunbeam for Jesus. That was good for me. And I'm really glad that they said to me, you can have any God you want. Well, my God, I decided, was going to be kind and loving and forgiving. I guess I showed them, huh? Of course, they didn't get upset. They acted like they'd had the idea, too. You know, anything original they try to take. But also about God is my God was the people in the rooms. I'd go there and Bill, somebody like him, would be there doing just fine, and I'm not doing fine. That's a power greater than myself. The group, as a whole, they liked me. I knew they were wrong, but they liked me, and they thought I was okay. Okay, boy, little did they know. And they were my power greater than myself. Sanity. It almost restore my sanity. Well, if I'd never known sanity, so all you were going to restore for me is insanity. Does that make any sense? All you were going to store for me is insanity because I never knew sanity. So I had to get a bar for that sanity. What is that? What does that mean? And Lee mentioned it last night in his talk about his little girl. Children, when they're born, most of the time, are pure and clean and sane. Innocence, to me, is equal to sanity. I want you to think about that. Innocence is equal to sanity. If I'm not doing anything to feel guilty or crazy, guess what? I'm feeling sane. Gets down to that simple. But I had to figure out what sanity was. I mean, it's a word we throw around all the time, but I had no idea. Man, you couldn't go by my household. You know, you couldn't go by my neighbors either. Well, there was one goofy kid. I don't know what was wrong with him. He grew up in the same neighborhood, the same rotten place I grew up, and he turned out just fine. I don't know what's wrong with him. And what was wrong with him was he had a mother and a father, and he had a good family life, and he was living in a bad environment, and that didn't affect him. But restore me to sanity. What does that mean? That means I quit choking you when I feel like it. That means I quit giving you that look and driving you away from me. That means that I start living life one day at a time. I'm powerless one day at a time. I can be sane one day at a time. Now, I'll tell you something I've noticed over the years in Alcoholics Anonymous and a lot of the other programs is we don't like sanity. We don't prefer it. And the reason we don't like it and prefer it is then we'd have to knock off our nonsense and shape up. A lot of years I liked being crazy, sober. Why? Nobody's going to ask you to do anything. Now, don't ask that flake. He won't show up. Hey, good. I liked my insanity. There was a part of my insanity that I absolutely loved and I wore as a badge of honor. It's like when you're my size and when you get thrown in jail, you give them the look. And for the most part, they're going, especially you might have to tear somebody up or something up and let them know you're crazy because they ain't going to mess with you if you're crazy for the most part. I brought that right into Alcoholics Anonymous. Instead of becoming saner, I become crazier in a sober way. To become sane, I've got to admit that I'm insane. Isn't that funny? I talk to a lot of people a lot of times, and they come in and they're really torn up. I just feel like I'm going to go into a million. I feel like I'm going insane, and I say, no, no, no. You're fighting for sanity. You are sane. If you were insane, you wouldn't know you were crazy. You wouldn't know you were going crazy. Again, it's surrender. It's okay to be insane because the minute we say it's okay to be insane, guess what happens? Sanity appears. Then we have a balance. In a power greater than yourself, I don't care what you call your power greater than yourself. But make sure it's the truth. Why is that? Because for the first few years of my sobriety, first year of my sobriety especially, I did something and I didn't mean to do it, but I did it. I started professing a faith I didn't have. There were old-timers around in AA, and they were talking about God. And I looked into their eyes, and I knew they were telling the truth about what they believed. And I started parroting what they were saying. And it was not my experience. The trouble with that is, sooner or later, you're going to have a challenge in life that the only thing that's going to keep you sober is your relationship with God. And guess what? If it's been built on a lie and other people's experience, you're not going to have much of a relationship. In fact, you'll be in one of the most slippery slopes you've ever been in, ever, in my opinion. So whatever you believe, believe it. Step two, I always encourage, if you think your higher power is a doorknob, hang on to it. Because at least you're being honest. You know, at least you're being honest. If you think your higher power is the group, great. If your higher power is your sponsor, great. Just anything other than you that's doing better than you was the secret for me. If I had to admit God was it, I would have been in trouble. If I had to admit, if I had to think Jesus wanted me for a sunbeam, or, you know, I had to become a monk in India, I probably would have passed. But when you told me that it's a power greater than myself that I could believe in, it was the first time in my life that I could acknowledge. I'm sure I was given the right to choose before, but I didn't know it. But for the first time in my life, step two said two things to me. One, for the first time in my life, I don't have to be crazy anymore. Because one of my secrets was, you don't get it. This goes on when I'm not drinking. You don't get it. You think it's because I'm drinking. You don't understand that if I didn't drink, it'd be worse. It'd be a lot worse. And when I quit drinking, it really gets goofy. I had to find a power greater than myself that could work with me where I was at. And that's one of the things I love about the 12 steps that does it better than anything else I've ever read or studied. That it comes right to where you're at. Right to where you're at and starts with you there. Regardless of where you're at, it'll start with you right where you're at. And I thank God for that, because, I mean, I was at a low place, especially when it comes to this power greater than yourself stuff. My sponsor always tells a great story. At least I think it's a great story. He was telling his sponsor, I can't really conceive of a power greater than me. And, you know, I had that kind of ego, too. I had that inferiority complex with the superiority complex, you know. It was kind of tough living that way. But he was telling his sponsor, he said, I really can't believe in a power greater than myself. And his sponsor said, really? And he said, yeah. He said, I just don't believe in that. He said, okay. He said, I want you to go out there under that streetlight and take off all your clothes. In about 20 minutes, a power greater than yourself in a black and white car will come up and take you away. Now, it sounds silly, but when you think about that, you know what I learned? Everything in my life was a power greater than me. Everything. The way you looked at me. The things I'd done. The hearts I'd broken. The mistakes I'd made. The police. Authority figures, the bosses, everybody had power over me and everything. So isn't it appropriate that I start at a power greater than myself that really means something to me? It's about honesty. It's about gut level honesty. And what I'm going to challenge you to do as we close this session and start the next one is anything you believe about God, put it in suspension right now. I don't care what you've been taught, what's been grilled into you. Put it in suspension. Let's today come up with what you believe. Scary, isn't it? Absolutely terrifying. If I don't believe that, am I going to hell? Not today. God said not till Sunday. So we got a couple days. But really put that in suspension right now. And let's think about what do we believe as individuals. My first honest prayer ever was, God, I don't know if you're there or not. I sure hope so. First time I'd ever been honest. It wasn't. It was surrender and humility, looking for direction. Those are the two ingredients in the steps that I think we forget about. At least I can forget about if I'm not very careful. Surrender and humility. It's not about who we become. It's not about what we become. It's about who we become. We can do a lot of things, but I believe the steps are designed for us to make us whole and complete entities and God's kids, just one of many members of the family. That's what I believe, and that's what we'll talk about more at the break. We'll start up again on the hour. 15-minute break. Anybody have any questions or thoughts so far? Excellent. I've answered every question. That's just good. 15. Everybody take their seats. We'll get going. Now, I need your help, too. There's a lot of times when I talk that I drop my voice, especially when I'm really into what I'm talking about. So if I drop my voice and you can't hear me, it will not insult me at all for you to go like this. Because I'm not up here to hear myself talk, promise you. And I want to share whatever God's given me with you. That's the whole purpose of this. So don't hesitate at all. If my voice drops, which I promise you it will, just give me a high sign there. We were talking about steps one and two, and I want to finish up a little bit on two. Because I usually do an hour on each step. And if I did that today, you'd be here 12 hours, and I just got a feeling you'd be fed up with me. Call it psychic ability. So it's tough to get a couple steps in, and in one we're going to try to do three in one time. It's tough to do that, but I'm going to do the best I can with it. And step two came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I just wanted to end up with that infers we want to be sane. I talked a little bit about that. I go to meetings a lot of times and people revel in their insanity. And it's an excuse for them to keep misbehaving and keep doing those things that they want to do. I am not a fan of that. I told you I used to like to be flaky so nobody'd ask me to do anything. And I always like to be crazy because, after all, isn't it all about me? And the reality of step two is part of my lifting of my insanity and restoring me to sanity is listening to you. Actually shutting off my world and seeing how you're doing. It's one of the biggest steps I had to finding sanity. You see, when I am fully focused on you, I'm not crazy about me. Or with me, however you want to put it. And that's a power greater than myself too. Listening to you can be a power greater than me. I am absolutely convinced that my sponsor for years wouldn't let me go to discussion meetings. And I said, why can't I go to discussion meetings? He said, it's real simple, Ed. For the first half of the meeting, you're going to think about what you're going to say. It's going to get your turn to talk, and then the second half, you're going to think about what you should have said. He nailed me. He said, I don't want you to go to meetings, and if you go, you're only allowed to state your name and your disease and listen. And I've become one of the better listeners I know. In fact, I've almost absolutely convinced that what you have to say is more than equal and usually more important than whatever I have to say. Isn't that amazing? The insanity of are the sanity of just being able to listen, not answering your question before you finish, not thinking of the answer before you finish, all that kind of insanity and self-obsession. You see, insanity for me covered every area of my life. I don't know about you, but insanity was in every area of my life. There was not a sane area of my life. There were some that were closer than others. So this step two in this insanity is real important, but equally important in the process of these steps, as I understand them, is sanity will return. We become well again. It says it in the book. And I know that annoys people. Because if we become well again, we can't act our own bad self, you know. And like a lot of us like to stay in self. A lot of power greater than ourselves, I've seen people, their own self-will becomes their power greater than themselves, sober. And that's scary and usually ends tragically. Because it isn't about me, it's about a power greater than myself. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand Him. There's that we again. It's not I. We made a decision. Turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Well, that's the old story about decision. You know that three birds on the log. There were three birds on the log. One made a decision to fly away. How many were left? 3, because decision is just a decision. Without action, it's nothing. And steps 1, 2, and 3, I believe, are action steps too. To back up just a minute, if you want to stop acting insane, stop acting insane.
Who would have thought of that?
I remember when I asked my sponsor one time, I said, how do you be kind and loving? He said, you act that way, Ed. And I thought, man, what a concept. I would have never thought of that. Isn't it a bigger process? No. We quit buying our own insanity. We fire our counselor. We fire our therapist in our heads because it's just bad information. We need sane voices of sanity outside of us. Now, when we make a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him, I'll go right back to it's got to be as you understand them. And I am absolutely convinced that God doesn't care where you start. In fact, in our book it says, but a crack. Open the door, but a crack, you know, is sufficient to our needs. And I really believe that. And I really believe that people that I see sober, usually for 6, 7 years, 13, 14 years, 20, 25 years when they're crazy, not that everybody is. I know nobody in here has ever gone through that, but I have. is when they quit developing. We stop on the journey somewhere along the way. And the step 3 is but a beginning of a journey. A journey, in my experience, is ever continuing and ever growing. The minute it stops growing is the minute I stop growing. And I start taking control again. How can I say this? Step 3 is not that, you know, step 1 says your life has become unmanageable. Nowhere in here did I say, okay, did I find it says, okay, it's manageable again now. Go ahead. It says you surrender it at the first and then you give it up every single day, one day at a time. And that's what this decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God. When will and life, what more is there? Think about it. I don't know about you, but I swore it said my alcoholism. I swore it said those people that are mean to me or the people I don't like. I never understood that it said my will and my life, and that's its entirety. Now, maybe you guys are brighter than me, but I didn't figure that out for a long time. Probably because I didn't want to. Because if I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him, probably wouldn't improve a lot of my actions. And we'll get into 6 and 7 in a few minutes, in a little while. But, my gods were my defects too. Let's talk about what we believed. In my case, what I believed about God was that He ripped people out of my lives. That He was mean, that He was arrogant. When somebody loses someone close to them, a lot of times when they come and talk to me, the first thing they say is, why did God do this? Or why did God let that happen? See, and I was taught that too. I had a cousin named Linda, who when I was 10 years old, Linda, if there was anybody ever close to God, it was Linda. She was perfect. You know what I mean? She did all the things right. She was pretty. She was smart. She did everything. I hated her. Just, you know. But I admired her at the same time because I thought, man, I can never do that. But boy, she sure does a good job. And I thought, if there's anybody ever close to God, it's Linda. And Linda was walking across the street and a truck come by and hit her. Knocked her 200 feet and killed her. And I remember going to the funeral and people would say, God must have wanted an angel. I said, so He hits you with a truck. I'll pass. Still do. You see, that when we talk about God and making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, I've got to acknowledge what I already believe, and what I believed was He was horrible. He ripped people out of my life. You know, my office is on that same corner that Linda was killed on. And every day I walk across and I celebrate Linda's life. You know why? Because I choose to. Part of my insanity and part of my hate of God was wanting to hang on to the pain and shaking my fist instead of healing. Every day I walk across that street and I celebrate Linda's life. And I celebrate her memory rather than make it all about me and how I feel. That was a lot of insanity in my life, too, where God was concerned. My mother would call me out of the blue, said, "Do you know what today is?" And I said, "No, it's the day your great-uncle Ralph died." I said, "Mom, I didn't know great-uncle Ralph." "Oh, but she did." And she would be sad all day. Now, what did I learn from that? That's my mother. If she does it, I do it. Now, how do I? I found that I would. Now, I'm not talking about the natural process of grieving. When we lose somebody we love, there's a natural process of grieving. But what I would do was I would use that grief to make it all about me. There was a guy walked into my office a few months ago, maybe 6 months ago now, and he said, this was on a Monday, and he said, "You know, oh man, I'm going to be upset Friday." And I thought, well, you're planning your depressions a week in advance. That's pretty good, you know. That's recovery, I suppose. And I said, "Why are you going to be depressed?" He said, "It's the anniversary of my daughter's death." And I asked him how long she'd been gone. It had been 3, 4, 5 years. And he was talking about how tough it was going to be for him. And I said, "Let me ask you something. Why don't Friday morning you get up and you just start celebrating her life and make it about her memory and all the good days you've ever had and all the joy that's ever been in your life and make it a day of celebration, grace, and happiness, or make it all about you? What would you like to do?" Oh, he got mad and stormed out. And I know exactly why. He had a week's worth of meetings going, "Oh, yeah. For me. Why? Oh, been there. Guilty as charged. Insanity. Program gives us a choice. My God gives me a choice. And I challenged you before you left to throw out everything you thought about God. This program, I think, makes us challenge us to evaluate everything we've ever believed. Old Chuck C. used to say, "I've thrown out everything I ever believed except the multiplication tables. They still seem to work the same way. Everything else since he'd been sober has changed, and that's certainly in my case." Now, what does that have to do with power greater than ourselves? Has everything to do with it, because I hated God. How could I believe in a God that would rip people out of my life? And I had several witnesses that would say that. Now, I want to remind you, I'm a collector of ones. The vast majority didn't say that at all, but the ones who said it, I remembered. The negative connotations, I remembered, and I put them in my little bag. And I carried them through life as my legs would buckle, and I kept thinking, what's wrong with me? It's what I was collecting was what was wrong with me. And if you got that kind of attitude toward God and you think that God just rips people out of your life, you're going to have trouble turning your delight, well, in life over to the care of God as you understand Him then, unless it's really as you understand Him. And what I understood is I got to start fresh. I could start right where I'm at. When I was a year sober, my father was murdered and was one of the most difficult things I'd ever been through. And people said, well, God must have wanted Clifford to not face tougher things in his life. So I said, so he shoots him in the face? This is it, a year sober. I'm still collecting those ones. I'm still hearing those ones about this evil, nasty, creepy God. And the priest that did my father's funeral gave me one of the keys to the kingdom. He said, you know, a lot of people would say Clifford's death is God's will. He said, I don't believe that at all. And I sat right up in the pew. He said, I believe God created human beings and gave us all free wills. Those people chose to do this act, and now it's God's will. You mean the reason kids are starving in Africa is because we're not feeding them and we want to blame God? Pretty much. There's plenty of food. You mean the reason cancer is rampant and people are dying right and left is we pollute everything we touch and want to blame God? Yeah, pretty much. Do you mean my cousin Linda was hit and killed by human error? Yeah, pretty much. Are you telling me that God didn't take any of them but welcome them? Amen. Thank you, God. He never ripped anybody out of my life. Life did. Humans did. Situations did. But God never did. In fact, I believe more than ever today that He welcomed them. He never took anybody, especially Linda, and especially my dad, after putting up with us seven brats for 20 years. You know, if we're going to make a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand Him, get one that you can understand, not that you have to fight with anymore. We're not the great debating society here. That's what I love about the freedom of faith that we present to everybody here. Whatever you want to believe, sure, I got my beliefs, and if you ever want to know one-on-one on those, I'd be happy to share them with you. But what I'm more interested in is your beliefs. You finding a way to find some peace from the inside out. Because I don't know about you, but I remember talking to my sponsor one day. And I called him up and I said, boy, I'm feeling kind of odd. He said, are you? He said, well, Ed, how's work? And I said, oh, good, good. And I was married at the time. He said, how's the family? And oh, good, good. He said, you go in plenty of meetings? I said, yeah, yeah, everything's great. He said, you know what's the matter, Ed? And I said, no, got no idea. He said, nothing. I went, oh. It's called peace. How can I acquire something that's unrecognizable? Peace scared me. You see, if I give up all this stuff, I'm going to be a void. I'm just going to be a giant vacuum. And that's not the truth at all. What I'm going to be is peaceful, without conflict. And I didn't know that. The program is about finding peace inside of me so I can live free from anything that destroys me. And for me, it started with alcohol. And it continues with every area of my life. Turned our will and our life over. What more is there? That means work. That means freeway drivers. No more calling number one or sending them the signal. You know? I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him. Now, if your will and life is over to the care of God and God is the fellow driver, then you're in real trouble, I would suppose. That's the other thing I had to come to conclusion with. My God had to be a source of good. There's a lot of things going on out there, spiritually especially now, and a lot of them dressed up as good, but aren't, in my opinion. For me, my God had to have a basis of good. Good all the time. All the time, not just some of the time. I couldn't have a God that changes like shifting shadows. 1 minute good, 1 minute bad. That's what I needed. I needed consistency in my God. Now, how I found that first was my sponsor. My sponsor. Every Wednesday night, I can promise you, I can tell you where he's going to be. My sponsor, anytime he says he's going to do something, with extremely rare exception over the 30 years he's been my sponsor, it happens. And when it doesn't, it's because it's physically impossible to happen. My sponsor is consistent. The reason I have a God that I know and love with all my heart today is because I have a sponsor that I know and love with all my heart. But I had to start that relationship somewhere. And I am real grateful it started with my sponsor. Now, am I saying my sponsor is God? No. But did he fit that role in a lot of ways? Yes. There were nights when I got so crazy, I grab my big book and I go park my car in front of his house. He never knew this for years. And I'd get in the back seat and I'd cuddle up with my big book and I'd be safe. This was 7, 8 years sober. And I was just terrified. And I'd get in front of his house and cuddle up with that big book and I'd be safe and I'd sleep like a baby and I'd wake up about 6:30 and drive away and he didn't know I was there. But it worked. And it was safe and it was good. There was nothing wrong with that. And I eventually worked my way to a God of my very own. As the steps insist we do, if we're going to be happy, joyous, and free. That, as we all know, comes at the promises, the end of step 9. But I believe here is the commitment that we have to make, starting with step 3. That'll show us how well we've done. 8 and 9 will show us how well we've done step 3. Our degree of happiness and joy and freedom will be in direct proportion, I believe, to what we did back here and what we're doing back here, because it's an ongoing process, I believe. It's a journey that absolutely never ends, and I'm excited about it rather than being sad about, oh, there's more work to do. And I did that for you.
So more? Oh, yeah.
Now, oh, more. Good. You know? We gotta make a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as you understand Him. And please let me be clear. Wherever you start's fine. I would suggest it be based in good. We won't get into the power and the spiritual thing, but if you don't think there's good and evil out there, tells me right where you're at. Because there just is. There just is, and it's as plain to me as that ocean is now. But it took a lot of work to get there. And I believe that the basis of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12-step program, and all, you know, there's over 236 different registered 12-step programs now. We're so easy at saying, you know, this thing will work for everybody if they wanted it to. Guess what? It's true, you know. But what we forget is it works in the other areas of our life too. And yes, I'm coming right back to that. What area of your life are you not working these steps in? Why do I say that? It's because I love you and I want you to stay here. We're losing way too many people. Outside issues. No, it isn't outside issues. It's inside issues that these steps in this program has the answer to if we apply it. Step 4. Fun step. You know, it's funny. Did you ever see one of those folks when they come in, they first come in and say, oh, I want to take that step 4. I want to take that step 4. Then they get up there and they go, oh, wait a minute. I think I want to think about that a little. Made a fearless and thorough moral inventory of myself, of ourselves, plural. But I had a pertinent question, I thought. I went to a step meeting and they talked about step 4 and I raised my hand and I said, by whose morals, yours or mine? Because if it was by your morals, I was in serious trouble. If it was by my morals, they deserved everything they got. Unfortunately, they gave me the bad news that it was my best thinking that got me here. And it's my best thinking that'll get me out of here if I don't change. Now, there's a lot of people around.
You know, I've been sober 25 years. I haven't taken any fourth and fifth step.
Gee, I couldn't tell. You know? And I'm not knocking that. If that's the kind of sobriety you want, hang out there. You know? That ain't what I want. You know, you can tell if somebody's done a fourth and fifth step or worked these steps by the way they live. It is reflective. It is reflective. It's like if you want to know how somebody's family's doing, ask the spouse.
Because we go, oh, fine. Yeah, we're doing good. Yeah, good. Nice to see you.
And the spouse is over here ready to kill. Now, it may be her problem, but chances are, or his problem, but chances are it's their problem. And we're coming here and simulating recovery. How you doing? Live and let live, day at a time. God, everything's wonderful. Yeah, yeah. We always say the steps are the roughest place to work. Those are at home. That's crap. It's the last place we ever try. It ain't the roughest place. It's just the last place we try. We're too busy trying to impress people in meetings at how well we're doing and going home being the same jerk we've always been. the same rotten employee with a rotten attitude we've always been. We want to tell them how good it is we're in AA, and they're going, yeah, right. I'd like to see a little difference. And they don't. Fourth step. The outline's in the book. It is an excellent outline. I urge you to use that. I urge you to do whatever you got to do that fourth step. But I urge you to do it. And there's a lot of different ways of doing it. In fact, some of the 12-step programs have changed it now. They have you write down some good stuff in there, too. Oh, write down some good stuff. I like that rationalization. I would have had done that. I would have never had to take an inventory. In fact, my first inventory was telling you why they needed to have it happen. Because I was a pretty good guy. And I really believe it's a thorough and fearless moral inventory. And when we talk about five, it's the exact nature of our wrongs. I believe those terms are in there specifically for that reason. I have to clean house. I envision the 12 steps for me as I'm a temple, okay? I'm a temple, and a lot of times you can be a temple and the temple looks pretty good. But there's step one is there's trouble in the temple. Step two is there's trouble in the temple. I can't seem to do much about it. Step three is need some help for this trouble in the temple. So what do? I call in an outside contractor. Step four, the contractor comes in and says, good news, I can help you, but you got to clean this mess up. Step five is we start loading the trucks. Step six is we start figuring out how we collected that mess in the first place, the behaviors that we did. Step seven, more of the same. Step eight is we start patching the walls and repainting them, putting in new carpet. Step eight and nine. Step ten is we clean that temple every single day. 11 is real simple. We find out God lives in our very own temple, and we try to share Him with everyone we meet. Step 12 is we try to spread God's love in His temple everywhere we go. Now, believe it or not, I got that out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when we're at step four and we're writing this down, write it all down. There are some that says, well, you know, just we need to know the nature. I'm sorry, I read in the book where it says we illuminate every nook and cranny, I believe is the term. I had to use step four as a very scraping of my soul. It is an opportunity for me to start fresh and clean house. I promise you, I can walk right out here and within 10 minutes run into somebody with that dead look in their eyes. And you know what I'm talking about. That would give anything to unload all the heartache, all the sadness, everything they've done wrong, and just leave it there. Step four is where we take our bag of ones that we've been collecting. And we get to drop them off at step five, but we got to look at the ones first to see why we got them. Step four is where I got to talk about my higher power, resentment. It ran everything in my life. My higher power, resentment, hate, anger, controlled me, made me do things I didn't want to do sober. Remember I talked about, I'm the type that when you take the alcohol away, it's a whole new arena. I need to learn how to behave sober too, because I didn't do that well when I was drinking. But I had to write down all that stuff. Especially those deep, dark secrets. Those ones that were never going to see the light of day ever. I'll share one of mine with you. You're probably going to think it's silly at the end, but it was something. Now, I need to tell you here that I'm a guy who beat a guy almost to death in jail, stone cold sober. Didn't bother me at all. He had it coming. He was a smart ass. So imagine this being my deep, dark secret. When I was 13, 14, there was a record out called Little Eva in the Locomotion. Anybody remember? Come on, baby, dude. Yeah. My buddy had a 45 RPM record player, and we'd play that over and over and over. And we just loved it. And I stole the record. Can't even tell you why. I stole the record. Next day I went over to Ron's house. He said, well, where's your record? Let's play. Let's put on. I said, I don't know. I have no idea. Now, isn't that funny to you? That thing probably seems like, well, so what? To me, it was the worst thing I'd ever done. And that's what an inventory is about. It isn't about what you think about what I've done. It's about what I think I've done. I can remember writing in that inventory, my first line on that inventory, I was sitting alone in a room by myself, and I wrote down, my mother is a fat pig and I can't stand her. And I covered it with both hands and I cried. Because we're not supposed to feel that way. The truth was, I did. And I've got to deal with what is, and that's the only way it's going to heal. And I got to report that, or I can't heal from it. It is so important that on step four, that we be rigorously honest. That's so important. It's the quality. Your life depends upon your honesty here. In all the steps, I believe. But it's important to get all that stuff out. It's important to take the time to clean that house and make it thoroughly. And I believe you go back to your childhood. I believe you go back to your earliest memories. Because remember my God, resentment? That ruled me. I hated you for when you looked at me funny when I was in second grade. You didn't even know it. I had to go all the way back and I had to clean that up. Or guess what? I got a half-cleaned house. And the healing can't take place. It's like spiritual surgery. Can you imagine going into an operating room that's half filthy? How many would like to do that? But isn't that what we can do on our steps? Isn't that what we can do on this step especially? Do it halfway and wonder why we still feel crappy and crummy at the end? Half measures avail us nothing. This is where we stand at the turning point. You know, to back up to step three, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with as thou wilt, to relieve me of the bondage of self, to take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. Of thy power, thy love, thy way of life, may I do thy will always. Going into this step, we made a commitment to our higher power that whatever he asks us to do, we're going to do it. God never shirks on his reward, but we can certainly shirk on our actions and our commitment. And this is critical here. This is really critical here. I had to leave there a lot of excuses for my behavior for a long, long time. I was one of those kids that was raised in a bad neighborhood. I always joke when I talk about, I would come from a very elite group of people called white trash. And I certainly did. And that was one of the toughest things for me to ever give up. It was tough. It was really tough. Because I had to give up what I'd been taught and all those ones I'd collected for all those years. Now, I didn't do that in my first inventory, I need to tell you. In fact, I don't know if that was even in there in my first inventory. I'm one of those that every 5 years I take a good fourth and fifth. You may just be excellent on step 10 and do that just fine, but I'm not excellent. I find that there's a lot of things that slip through the cracks that I need to get cleaned up. About every 5 years, I do a good fourth and fifth. Why not? And one of the things I find out when I do those extra fourths and fifths is the things that have been uncovered now. Chuck C. used to say it's uncovering, discovering, and discarding his sobriety. And what I found by inventories is, well, my sponsor always says it's like a cesspool. You skim off the top and it looks clear for a moment and then more floats up, you know? And isn't that the truth? It certainly was in mine. And you're not going to do a perfect fourth step. If you've got 102 pages, you've got the wrong idea. It's not about self-obsession. It's about what you did wrong. Moral inventory. Now, what's moral? There isn't a person in here that doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. Or you wouldn't be here. In fact, I'll share a little something with you. Do you want me to prove to you right now that you're a good person? I can prove it to you right this minute. You want me to prove it to you? And you'll be the proof. All right, I want everybody to think about the worst thing you ever did ever. Just close your eyes a minute and think about the worst thing you ever did ever. You got it? How does it make you feel? Anybody?
Stupid.
Bad. Bad. Shame. Oh, and that's the biggie. Shame-based. Well, I got good news for you. If you feel bad, it proves you're good. If you're bad, you wouldn't care. Isn't that amazing? The very fact that we feel bad proves our goodness and that we know the difference. Now, I need to tell you, there were some things in my inventory that were pretty bad that at the time I didn't feel bad about. I do now because the work continues. But the very fact that we feel bad about what we do, have done, proves our goodness, and that's what I had to start focusing on. You see, the inventory is to get rid of all the negative. If you get rid of all the negative, what is left? The positive. If you get rid of all the crap, just the goodness is there. And I don't know about you, but that's where I was, real unfamiliar territory for me. Goodness. How do you live in goodness? Well, then it goes back into the unworthiness and all that, which hopefully we're going to take care of in the next couple steps. But it's important because my life depends upon these steps. I don't know about yours. Notice I didn't say my sobriety. I wouldn't have sobriety without the steps, but my life depends upon these steps, because after sobriety in one area, I can have drunkenness in a lot of others and come to meetings and shove it down your throat that I'm fine, I'm a good member. Really? Just don't come around my kids. You know? It's true. Absolutely true. You know, I don't mind hanging around anybody who's got the worst defects in the world and they're working on them. But I won't hang around people who are bragging about their defects and taking them pridefully. I'll keep my children away from them. Because if you're bragging about those, what are the ones you're not talking about? And the great healing factor for me in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is this is the time when I can become even. This is the time when I can unload all the junk and find the gold that's left in here. What's the gold? I read it to you when we started. That concept of God that's down, deep down inside in each and every one of us. What I'm finding out in my four step is God is right here just as it always, but I couldn't see him because he was so buried with every conceivable illness and disease that you can, and rationalization that you can think of. When I get rid of those, all I've got left is God, which to me is good. But it takes work. And it takes commitment. Step three, don't think that you have to have it all down before you go to step four. Step three to me is a never-ending journey, and as I said, I celebrate that. Step four, you're not going to get it perfect. Get it done. If you're waiting to get it perfect, it's probably never going to happen. Please work with a sponsor on your fourth and fifth. It talks about when we write all this stuff down, we can get depressed, we can get down. And that's when we talk to our sponsor that helps bring us up and remind us of what the task is about and remind us of the goal and to help us walk forward into the next steps. But this is a step to be fearless and thorough about. But you know what?